This is The Camp with Zach Heilprin and The Athletic's Jesse Temple.
Yes, welcome in. Badgers nearing the end of spring practice. They are on the field for practice number 12 this morning, Thursday morning, in Madison, inside. It was another solid day for the defense, another solid day for the edge guys. We'll get into all of it. I think that kind of where we probably will focus a lot of the show is on the edges, Jesse, both offensively and defensively, and also at quarterback, because on Tuesday, or I should say on Monday when we talked, I mentioned how good Tyler Van Dyke looked on Saturday. He looked pretty darn good on Tuesday as well. And then on Thursday, it was more Braden Locke that had a better day of the two quarterbacks. So where do we want to start? Do we want to start with the quarterbacks? Do we want to start with the offensive line? Do we want to start with the outside linebackers? Where would you like to start today?
We should always lead every show with the quarterbacks, shouldn't
okay.
we?
Yes, we should. All right. So Tuesday, it was another very good day for Tyler Van Dyke. I think that was probably the headline we're coming out of there. Had a couple of another big throws down the field that I don't know that we saw earlier in camp. And Braden Locke had his moments too, but Tuesday was especially good for Tyler Van Dyke.
Yeah, I think this is what we've been looking to see from him. And it does feel like, and Luke Fickell talked about this after practice Tuesday as well, that he is growing more comfortable with the offense. That would seem to be a natural occurrence, given that this is his first spring with the program. But I wanted to see some separation of some sort. And I'm not sure necessarily that we've seen all that much through 12 practices, but it certainly does feel like Van Dyke has made some significant strides. And a lot of it comes down to what Fickell talked about, not making those catastrophic plays. And we've seen a handful of those, a pick six or an interception or something like that, you would consider to be a catastrophic play. But put your wide receivers in position to make a play. And he had several great throws, especially on Tuesday. And I think Tuesday to me, and I wrote about this, was what I called the best big play day of the spring, which you need your wide receivers to be out leaping DBs on these 50-50 balls and having a Tucker Ashcraft make a crazy one-handed diving touchdown catch in the red zone. But you also, as a quarterback, need to put the ball in the right places. And I think for the most part, he did that. And another element to Van Dyke's game that maybe we've talked about some, but I think is, and even on Thursday, you can see it coming along, his ability to gain chunks of yardage on the ground. I think it'd be really important for this offense next season. I'm not comparing him to Tanner Mordecai. Obviously, I don't think Van Dyke has that 4.6 40 speed, but I think he can succeed in a lot of different situations, whether it's read option or misdirection or even when a play breaks down. And that's something that Fickell said too, that he can create things at 230 some pounds. He can be physical and give the offense a little bit more balance. And as Fickell called it, a different edge to some of those things. So for the most part, I think towards the second half of the spring, it's been encouraging what Van Dyke has done, but Locke continues to push him. And so by no means, at least in my mind, is this a done deal, even though I've said before, I think when game one starts, it'll be Van Dyke there.
Yeah, I'd like to talk about the running aspect of this. I don't disagree, right? Like at 230 pounds, he's going to be a load to bring down. But I also, he's not like Tanner could move around in the pocket and yeah. Like has some quickness to him. I don't necessarily think that like Tyler has the quickness aspect of it. Once he gets going, he can get going and it's going to be a load to bring down. But I don't know that he's going to be moving around the pocket and doing that same stuff that Tanner was able to do last year. I think that to me, that's like the biggest difference. If you're talking about him as a runner, yeah, he doesn't have like the 4.6 speed, but it's the maneuverability inside the pocket to buy time or to get out of the pocket. I don't know necessarily that that's going to be his game.
Yeah, I would agree. I think to me, it's largely on plays where you're going into that play knowing that's either the first option or the second option. Like, I fully agree.
I know what you're saying.
It's not a situation. I mean, I did say he can, like, when a play breaks down, but it's not, hey, here's an edge rusher barreling down on you. He's got that escapability, and all of a sudden he's going to turn a sack into a 7-yard gain. But I do think there are certain situations, especially like some of that read option stuff, where you get the defenders committing to a running back, and he's got a little bit of open space, yes, I think it takes some time for him to get going. You look at his numbers at Miami, it's not like I'm expecting him to be a 400-yard rusher or something like that. And certainly sacks will play a part in that. But I think the point I'm making is that can be a part of his game and help this offense in a way that I'm not sure I necessarily anticipated when he came here.
Yeah, again, he's still going to do most of his work with his arm, but some of the design runs that they've been doing with him where he knows like that's going to be the case, I feel like is something that is going to be beneficial for them. Now, that said, the biggest problem, and you mentioned it, Fickle talked about it, the disastrous things, right? Like what did he call them?
Well, he called it like catastrophic plays.
Catastrophic, yeah. Catastrophic, disastrous, whatever you want to call them. They're turnover plays. They're plays that you just can't make. And he had, like on Tuesday, he had a throw into the end zone that Nyzer Forkerian just made a great play on. Like it was a fantastic play by him, and he intercepted it as he was falling to the ground. On Thursday, there were a couple throws there where I don't know that it was necessarily the DBs making plays as much as it was some questionable decision making. He threw one, and it felt like maybe that the DB was actually the intended target because there was just not a window there. And he tried to, I think it was RJ Delancey, tried to force it into a guy behind him. And RJ Delancey, if he hadn't, he couldn't hold on to it. It was obviously an absolute bullet, and that's why he couldn't hold on to it. But he was in a pretty good spot to pick that pass off. And then there was one later on where he looked like he was looking for, was it Vinny Anthony? That was the intended receiver, or maybe it was one of the other slot guys. And he was under pressure, and he threw it, and it was a little out of Anthony's range. It went over his head. Nyzer Forkerian right there for the interception. So there are those, catastrophic plays, if that's the word we want to use, that he has to wipe out, because those were a big part of his struggles the last 2 years in Miami.
Yeah, those are the two plays that stood out most to me from Van Dyke's. And I know there were some good moments on Thursday, but it was within a three-play sequence. And you're right, he had a wide receiver. It was on the – well, there was a wide receiver running down the field on the left sideline, but it did not look from our vantage point that there was much of a window. There was a DB in the wide receiver's area. And then underneath was Delancey, who should have intercepted it and would have returned it for a pick six. And then a few plays later, like you're talking about, I think Van Dyke he was a little bit under pressure, and he forced one, or just it sailed over Anthony's head, and Forkerian took advantage of it. It's April. It's okay to have that happen now, although not ideal, but these are exactly the types of situations that you don't want to be putting yourself in next season, and the things that he needs to avoid in order for this offense to have a chance against a really difficult schedule. And I think that's the other thing is, so many of these opponents next season, you're going to be putting yourself in a situation where you make a mistake like that, you might not win the game because of that. And so, yes, he's got to be able to limit that. I know that, again, Fickle felt like the quarterbacks had been moving in the right direction in terms of avoiding those types of plays. And you're not going to be perfect in practice when you're attempting this many passes in so many different situations. But for Van Dyke, that feels like the biggest bugaboo or biggest knock that he's got to be able to avoid, in addition to simply being able to stay healthy, which has been an issue.
Yeah, for sure. So that's the Van Dyke side of this. Braden Locke had his moments on Tuesday, and then I thought he actually was a better quarterback on Thursday. I don't know if you agreed with that or not. There were some plays to be made, and he made them. He certainly had one on Tuesday over the middle to Quincy Burroughs on what would have been, I think, like a 10 or 15 yard touchdown pass. Just beautiful between two guys, just an absolute dart right where it needed to be, and it was a touchdown. He had a couple of not as good of throws to on Thursday, but this felt like a better practice for him than it did for Van Dyke. If I don't know if you agree with that or not.
Yeah, I would. And I mean, we're obviously taking one piece of the puzzle here out of 15 practices, but I think it is indicative of the fact that one guy has not clearly emerged above the other. And this, at least and this is another thing Fickle said about the quarterbacks, has been a good thing as far as he's concerned, because he said Braden is not making it easy on Van Dyke. He knows the offense, and he's been really consistent and has made some plays. And Fickle's belief is, and maybe he's saying that because this is the situation they're in, although I can't say this is a bad thing. So the best thing for us is to have a legitimate competitive battle. And that goes for any position, but especially at quarterback. And I feel like this is a legitimate battle because Locke is not going away. And he has made some really good throws. I thought Tuesday was a pretty solid day for him as well. And he didn't have that big play that was intercepted, but he's put his wide receivers in position. Wisconsin, I think at this point can go into the season feeling comfortable that they have two guys that can help the team if necessary. And again, as Fickell pointed out, based on last season, that very well may end up being the case in terms of someone being able to stay healthy a whole season. There's been a lot of seasons at Wisconsin, just go back the years we've covered it, where you needed more than one quarterback. So they do have two guys who seem to be pretty close with each other. And at this point, Fickell seems to be pleased with that competition.
Name a full year where you didn't need the backup at all.
So I think there's only been two, actually.
2019.
2017, when Alex Hornibrook had the Orange Bowl season, and then 2019 with Jack Cohn, even though that was a year when Cohn had the high ankle sprain and he still played through it, so he had an injury. But very few seasons have we gone through where you just had the starting quarterback the entire season.
Right. I mean, Chase Wolf filled in a bunch of times.
Yes.
for Graham Mertz in 2020 and 21 and in 22. Last year, obviously, but just go back through the years. It doesn't regularly happen where you get the quarterback through the entire season. So yes, I think at some point they probably will need both of them. I also found it interesting, like, he talks about wanting that competition and being okay with that competition. And yet he also said earlier in spring that the inability to lock in with one group is not necessarily ideal either. Right? Like for the quarterback not to be able to lock in and be the guy and know he's going to be the guy every single snap, like Mordecai did last year. That's not how this is. If you make a mistake, it's very likely that, you know, maybe two snaps later, the other guy's going to be in. So there's personally, this is a personal opinion. He can say it's great that they have a competition and that's what they want. He would much rather someone grab it and run away with it. I don't know if that's going out on a limb and saying that. Why would you not want to know who your starting quarterback is at this point?
Yeah, I mean, I've felt that way this spring. Like, you just want somebody to emerge so you know what you have. And it would be easier in some respects because then you can build that continuity. Okay, this guy's going to run with the ones. This guy's going to go with the twos. If there is a silver lining, you've got both quarterbacks getting these opportunities with the ones, so that in the event that either one has to play, there is a level of comfort. Because, I mean, even think about last year. Well, Braden Locke was thrown into a tough situation after Mordecai got hurt against Iowa and his practice reps had been with the twos, and now you're working with a different set of guys. These guys have gotten a pretty equal number of reps between the ones and the twos, which is something that continues. I mean, there are situations where, let's say, Van Dyke goes with the ones, Locke goes with the twos, and then the ones are back out there, and it's Locke with the ones. So, I mean, it's been a pretty even flow between those two guys in terms of the reps they're getting with both the ones and the twos.
For sure. For sure. And the biggest difference between running with the ones and twos is not wide receiver. It's not tight end. It's not running back. It's the offensive line.
Great segue.
And the just the complete lack of experience and age, and just it just does not happen with the second team group because they just don't have the guys that have been around for a lot. So I think we talked about it on Monday, where it was like, oh, it's really a big deal. It was really a big difference between the number one wide receiver, the number two wide receiver, the number one running back, the number two running back. Probably not. But offensive line, more so than in any other position on this team right now, there is a huge drop off between the top line and the second line. So the quarterbacks that get to go with the first team are in a much better area to succeed. But even them, it has been, we'll take the we want to take the offensive side or the defensive side. We'll take the offensive side for now. You asked Luke Fickell the other day, because let's be fair about it, they had like 10 sacks. They had double digit number of sacks on Tuesday. I know we're not supposed to take stats and all that stuff, but you know, it's hard not to at least start counting that stuff up in your head, because there was a ton of them, and a lot of them were coming from the second team, dealing with some of the youth at tackle for the offensive line. But I look at the offensive line and say, yes, or I should say quarterback, you're probably going to need both guys. Well, you're probably going to need more than just the five offensive linemen. And right now, at least at the tackle spot, that would be just a huge, huge concern.
Yeah, the second team offensive line, there's no doubt, has struggled. And just based on what we've seen, and again, these things can be fluid, but so Kevin Haywood, a freshman early enrollee, has been handling all the left tackle reps with the twos, which says a lot both about the depth, but also his potential talent level. James Durand has been at left guard, although I mean he's played a couple different positions. They have Kerry Kadenko at center, JP Benchwell at right guard, who also has gotten occasional reps with the ones, and Colin Cubberly, who has moved around as much as anybody, is now at right tackle. They've had him at center with the threes. They've had him at guard, and he's another early enrollee. So you look at that lineup in particular, and the only one who's ever played a college snap at Wisconsin is Benchwell, and that's in the single digits, if I'm not mistaken. It's not very many, and you're seeing that materialize during practices. Now, this leads to the natural question, if we're just talking about offense defense, which is what I asked Fickell of, you wanted a lot more explosiveness and playmaking off the edge, and it seems like, based on what we've seen this spring, you're getting that. But what does that mean for the offensive line? And it's a question we'll really be able to answer during the season. He does feel very confident about his number one tackles, which he has said on multiple occasions this spring, which would be Jack Nelson and Riley Malman. Said they've gotten a lot better as a unit, and he likes the competitive situations that have been created. But certainly from a depth and experience and execution standpoint, there's a lot left to be desired with the reserves. And they're in a spot, too, with the threes, where they're so far down the line on threes that, for example, on Tuesday, Mabry Mattire, who's now getting all those three reps, they would throw him in there for a rep with the twos just so he can see what it's like with a line that might be able to better protect him. Like that's the position that they're in, which is part of why they went to the portal to get an offensive lineman from Vanderbilt. And they're in this spot because Barrett Nelson has been hurt and they have three freshmen that won't be here as part of the 2024 recruiting class until the summer. So it's not ideal. You're throwing these guys into the fire, but it makes for some really tough times, I think, in terms of the offensive functionality with the second team.
I've got a question for you, but we'll talk about the outside linebackers first. John Pius, Leon Lowry, Daryl Peterson, the young guys with Thomas Heiberger and LaFelle. When you look at what they've done to this point, do you say this is more about how good they've been or how questionable the depth along the offensive line is? And let's be fair, they've had some success against the first team as well. Where would you put, where is the, because you asked Fickell that, right? Like as you laid out with your question to him, essentially, which one is it? Is it the, you know, this all goes, is, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Is this the outside linebackers and the pressure that they're able to create, or is it the offensive line in having some concerns there?
Well, I think they have to go hand in hand. I think it's a little bit of both.
Jesse?
Yeah, can you hear me?
I can hear you. I don't want that answer.
I'll go with the outside linebackers because okay. there was a situation on Tuesday where by my count, I think there were three consecutive would-be sacks, some of them sacks, because you can't destroy the quarterback in practice against the first team offense. I've been very impressed with the outside linebackers and what they've done, especially those top three that you mentioned. It's impossible to know what that means in terms of translation to stats next season, because can you do this against Alabama and Iowa and all the other teams that they're going to play? But the leading sack getter last year was Daryl Peterson with 4.5 sacks. I kind of feel like I'd be stunned if that was the high number for one of these guys this season. On the other hand, I'm not going to sit here and proclaim that they're going to be first team all Big Ten. I do think they're in a way better position to be effective off the edges than they were last year when they were in a spot where CJ Getz, for you know, everything that he brought to the table, had to play way more snaps than they wanted him to. I think they just got more explosiveness and dynamic guys off the edge this year.
All right. So Jesse's word. So Jesse says the offensive line is a wreck. So, all right, we're on. No, I'm kidding. But that is the thing that we deal with in the spring, and we do with it in fall camp too. And it's why I think we have tried to limit I don't want to say our positiveness or, you know, being positive about certain aspects of what we've seen this spring, but I think we've been a little bit more under control with how we've described things and how everything's played out, simply because what we saw last year ended up not being, and we, you know, that's not new. A lot of things that happen in spring and a lot of things we see in fall camp then don't actually turn over into what it actually is in the season. Now, one thing we saw last spring was Will Pauling doing great things, right? And it ended up being a really, really impressive year for him. So that's not like anything we see here doesn't end up being the case in a season. It's just you want to be a little bit conservative, I think, at this point in talking about how good these outside linebackers are going to be. But I certainly think athletically they are vastly improved from where they were at this time last year. I don't know that that can be something that can be argued, because it's just with Pius and Lowry, Darrell Peterson has taken a step, and then those two young guys are certainly something different. And hopefully, obviously, Aaron Witt is able to get back. It sounds like it may not be in spring. He's been rehabbing. He's got an arm injury that has him in a sling. So that's unfortunate. We're both want to see him just because of everything that he went through. But all I'm saying is athletically, they're much better in a better spot now than they were at this time last year or at this time last fall.
Yeah, and even the two early enrollees at outside linebacker, Heiberger and Nelly Lufele, have been, I think, really good this spring in the roles that they have, and sometimes that means going against the threes, but there have been a lot more two reps for those guys. Lufele, in particular, the last couple practices, feels like he's been a menace back there, and I know he's not going against the ones, but just for a guy who was in high school last semester, it feels like he's really starting to pick it up. I know I've talked about Heiberger on several occasions. There is some very good talent at that spot for the future, even if you don't see it next year. So you feel good about that. I think the other thing, and somebody made a comment to this effect in my story off Tuesday, sometimes it's hard to know what any of this means, because if there's a 45-yard pass that Tretch Kekahuna hauls in, that means the defense gave up a 45-yard pass. So what exactly... how does that equate when you get to the season? And it's often hard to know, but what you can notice are who some of the standouts are. And while it doesn't always come to fruition, oftentimes it does. If there are a few guys who start to rise to the top, it means it's happening for a reason.
Yeah, I mean, I certainly would agree with that. Lufele has a little bit of and maybe it's just because I'm not biased, but the idea of Nick Herbig in my head, because he's also from Hawaii, but he's got some of that same juice in terms of like how he reacts after he does something great. Like he's got some energy to him, and he's got some fire to him. I think obviously Wisconsin got another good one there from Hawaii, and we'll see exactly what that means for him in year one, whether he can get in on special teams or whether he could even find his way into a spot. The biggest thing here with this group, though, the linebackers in general, is when they go to some of their different packages, they can bring on even more inside linebackers that can rush from a whole bunch of different places. We've seen that throughout the spring, whether it's, you know, they get Allegro and they get Cheney and they get today it was Sebastian Cheeks, but they've also had a number of other guys, Jaheim Thomas, and we're not even really at this point talking about Taka Curtis, because he's still coming back from an injury as well. They have just so many different body types that I'm excited to see how they work them in. There was a blitz period today where Jake Cheney is just he's just so quick on some of the stunts that he's able to do to get in and get around guys. And I don't think he's going to lead them in sacks, but I think he's going to be a problem in the backfield when they decide to blitz him, because he's got some unique short area quickness that I don't know that they have in some of these other guys.
Yeah, it's kind of easy to start overlooking him a bit when you look at the portal haul as a whole, and if you're a fan, you're getting excited. Oh, they got Jaheim Thomas. He's the leading tackler at Arkansas. He was great at Cincinnati before. They got Tackett Curtis. Man, that was one of the biggest what-if recruiting losses that Wisconsin had, and now he's here. But Cheney has been really good this spring. It's going to be hard to keep him off the field for the reasons you laid out. He is a problem, especially like if a running back is trying to pick him up and blitz pick up, or like you're talking about, if he can do a stunt and create a problem off the edge, it's a good problem to have for Wisconsin. And in trying to figure out that problem, that's why they're utilizing linebackers in a variety of ways, because certainly feels like that's going to be one of the strengths to the defense.
So we hit on some of the things that I wanted to. Is there anything that we haven't that has stood out to you over the last couple of days of practice?
I think we've pretty much covered it. I mean, the offensive line depth is something we've been talking about for quite a while. And obviously, we mentioned some of the portal activity. I know we talked about this on the last show, so Leighton Nelson committed, but they're obviously still pursuing guys at other positions. And the biggest one, at least it would seem to be, is CJ West, who's the Kent State defensive tackle transfer. We saw him at practice on Tuesday. I know The Athletic does its list of the top players in the portal from the spring window, and he was listed as 12th. And I think among defensive guys, he's probably one of the more coveted. So that's at least something of note. We haven't necessarily talked a ton about portal movement because there hasn't been a bunch, although there have been a couple guys leave, we know. But they're still trying to put the pieces together. And so that's why they've been very active in terms of trying to get a guy or two on campus.
Yeah, and Fickell has talked about the defensive line at times. But, I mean, it's clear that even with TJ, I feel like even if TJ Bowlers hadn't gone into the portal, they still would have been pursuing guys. And CJ West, a big body, you know, he also had 50 tackles and 7 tackles for loss and a forced fumble last year for Kent State. But 6'2", 315, they don't have, in terms of guys that are ready to play, they don't have that body type on this roster, right?
Yeah.
Jamel Howard is that size, but he's not necessarily ready to play. I think he's flashed at times, same with Ernest Willer, but they're also with the threes, and they have not taken, you know, any snaps higher up than that, from what I recall. So he is a body type that's not on this roster that is ready to play right now.
I think it would be a very good win for them if they were able to get him, although that remains to be seen because he still was slated to visit Michigan and Indiana this week. He's tweeted about offers from LSU, Rutgers, Miami, K-State, Colorado, Arkansas, Texas A&M. So a very highly coveted player because, again, defensive linemen like that don't grow on trees. Someone who's proven and done it at an FBS level. Obviously, Wisconsin brought Elijah Hills in from Albany of the FCS, and Hills has had some good moments, especially since he's taken over more of the two reps with Bowlers gone. But the more impact players, the better. So that's certainly something that has stood out.
Do you know where CJ West is from?
Is it Illinois?
It is. Yeah.
I don't remember
What were you saying?
I don't remember what city.
Yeah, he went to Nazareth Academy. So I feel like
Justin Taylor went there.
Yeah,
right?
So I believe so. He's from LaGrange Park, which
right.
So yeah, there are some connections there, but we'll see if they're able to close that one. That would be a big one for them. That would certainly be a big one for them to be able to get. The draft gets going tonight, Jesse. We're not expecting to hear any Wisconsin names tonight. Here on Thursday night, Friday, maybe, but certainly on Saturday, you would think Braylon Allen and Tanner Bordellini get to hear their names called. Over under 2.5 Badgers get drafted.
I'm trying to think of who the third would be.
Well, I mean, obviously the NFL Combine thinks that Mumu Drogmeda is good enough to get drafted. I thought I saw, who was it? Mel Kiper had him as his 20th ranked inside or off ball linebacker. You know who there have been at times get drafted? Long snappers. And Peter Bowden is thought to be the top rated long snapper available. So, I mean, the Packers have drafted a long snapper. They did it a couple years ago. So it's not like impossible for it to happen. But if I was to say over under 2.5, I'd probably take the under.
I would too, with the assumption being that anybody else could be a right after the draft free agent type of situation, unless you're in desperate need of a long snapper. I'm not, you know, following all 32 teams, but I would, based on what we've seen in terms of projections, I think Braylon and Tanner are at worst fourth round, which is a pretty good spot to be in.
Which one goes first?
And that's another good. I'll go Bordellini. Since I think it's flip a coin though.
It definitely is. Yeah, I mean, I think Tanner's turned some heads. It really comes down to whether how many different positions do you think he can play?
Yeah.
Can he play center in the NFL? Right? Most people would list him as a guard at this point, even though he played a ton of center last year and he's listed as a center under most people. I think, do you think he can play center in the NFL is probably the biggest question as to where you view him in the draft. If you view him as a guy that can play center and play guard, or if he's a guy that can play guard and be an emergency center, I think that may differentiate where you think or how much value he holds.
Yeah, well, you create a bigger need for a wider pool of teams by being right. able to do more. And the other thing is, I mean, in terms of knowing who's going to go first, it always comes down to position of need. I also think of, and I don't know if teams look at it this way, but longevity, like an offensive lineman, you know, can have a 10-plus year career. You don't necessarily often see that with running backs, but who could have the greater impact right away? I mean, there's a lot to like about what Braylon has done, but both of them have put themselves in as good a situation as they could be in. And if it doesn't happen day two, I would expect it to happen very early on day three.
So I'm never one not to to see an idea and take it and use it while giving credit, of course, which I'm going to do right now. Friend of the show, also on the beat, Colton Bartholomew, currently on baby duty. So congratulations to him. But he tweeted out this morning a question, because the Packers are not going to have any, or I should say the Badgers are not going to have a first round pick again. They haven't had one since 2017. Is the next first round pick on the roster right now?
Oh man,
I feel like that's it. It's I don't think it is, unless someone just like, unless one of the offensive linemen or one of the outside linebackers all of a sudden just become that dude. I don't know that it is, because I don't think Hunter Waller is definitely an NFL talent. Riley Mullman's definitely an NFL talent. Jack Nelson with a good, obviously, is going to be an NFL talent. Like, these guys are going to play in the NFL, but I don't envision them being taken in the first round.
I don't right now see a first round guy, as I'm just going through the roster in my head. First round guys are someone who, you know, is on an all-American type of level, or first team all Big Ten.
Right. But see, we didn't think that of Ryan Ramczyk going into the 2016 season.
That's
we
fair.
We also didn't think that of TJ Watt going into the 2016 season. So both of those guys, now the pedigree certainly with Watt, you felt like at some point he was going to be different, but Ryan Ramczyk was playing Division III 2 years earlier. No,
I think I think their best prospect feels like Waller, but also the offensive lineman. Like, Jack Nelson certainly can help himself. Riley Mullman, I mean, like 6'8 dudes, obviously, just
that trees.
Can move and play tackle. That's very helpful, especially in the pros and the success Wisconsin has had there. But it's hard to see very many guys, as you start to cull it down, who could legitimately be in that conversation, I think, at least as of now.
Yeah, again, as I said, we don't know. Certain guys can jump out of nowhere, right, and just pop up, and all of a sudden you have to take notice of them, and they become All-Americans, or they become All Big Ten, they become All-Americans, and they test so well that they end up going. And that's essentially what happened with TJ Watt and with Ryan Ramczyk. Like, they had really, really good seasons, but they also then went and tested well and ended up going towards the end of that first round in 2017. So I think it's an interesting question. It's an interesting question. Wisconsin still has three practices left. They'll be on the field Saturday morning, and we'll be back on Monday to talk about it. Jesse, thank you very much.
Thanks, Zach.
All right, there he is. Jesse Temple from The Athletic. You've been listening to The Camp.